You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's guest is Sum 41. Yes, you heard that right. Fucking Sum 41. I don't feel any sense of guilt saying this out loud. I fucking love this band as much as I did as a teenager. They're one of those bands that most people associate with a specific place and time. But what's mind-blowing is how Sum 41 never really went away. Amongst their fan base, it's the consensus that the band's longevity is partially due to the songwriting they displayed on their second album, Does This Look Infected? This year marks the 15th anniversary of that album, which has prompted them to do a tour of it around the States and Europe. I caught up with Cone and Dave Brownsound while they were here in New York ahead of their sold-out show at Terminal 5, and we traced the history of the album while also going into why it stood the test of time. This is the 405 Exchange with Sum 41. Enjoy. Knowing endless consequences, I feel so useless in this. Get back, step back, and as for me, I can't believe. So you're already in on a couple of dates for this tour, and it's the anniversary tour for Does It Look Infected. How does it feel? How's it been so far? Like, how's it feel?
Amazing. Yeah. We recorded this in New York, so this New York show is going to be pretty special. Recorded and mixed in New York City.
Actually, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I mean, all the rest of the shows have been great, and I think, you know, as we get into like Boston and Philadelphia and Detroit, it's probably going to get even better, because that's kind of our stronger coast is the East Coast, but most of them, they've been pretty good, and it's fun to be playing songs that we haven't played in like 15 years.
That's something I definitely want to get into, but before I do, I mean, I guess the obvious question is, how would you say the experience of touring for this album has been in contrast to whatever expectations you had toward it? Like, has it been kind of surprising as the dates have been going on?
Surprising, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's surprising to see how many people are into this album still, like 15 years later.
Yeah.
And even into like the deep cuts, like not just like the Still Waiting and Hell songs, it's like everyone likes every track off the record. Yeah. And these dates sold really well, just as much, they've sold just as well as like just a regular tour that we've done, so, and it's just for like one record, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah. I was in middle school when the album came out. I was born here in the States, grew up in the UK, and then we moved here to Westchester, New York, and I did middle school there, and the album came out around then. Yeah. And something that's really trippy to me about the album is I remember being familiar with the previous album, Old Killer, mm-hmm. and pretty much everyone in my school was into that at the time.
Nice.
That was like the album people would listen to before or in between classes, but what's cool about Infected was it felt so different, and like, years later, I can't pinpoint as to why. I wonder for you guys, as the people who made it, did it feel like a different type of album while you were making it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And especially when it was done, like, we gave it to our Canadian label, and they were just kind of like, there's no In Too Deep on this record. What do we do with this?
And yeah, I mean, it was darker, and it was heavier and harder. So, I mean, I felt like it was different right off the hop, like, yeah. Right from pre-production and rehearsals, it felt like a different album than All Killer. And we had already toured like 2 years around the world, so we were already getting better as musicians anyway, and so I think we all knew we were able to make a better album than, well, I don't know, better is subjective, but like a more technical, harder, more challenging album than All Killer.
Would it be fair to say that in terms of, you know, it's really trippy asking us about this album because so much of it is in retrospect, but because I was young at the time, there's so much that I'm not aware of what it was like for you guys at the time. And I'm curious, like, as someone who's lived with the album, the songwriting feels so much more refined and serious. I wonder in terms of, like, back then when the album came out, do you feel like the reaction was that people were taking you a little bit more seriously after they heard this album?
I don't know. I know that we kind of were exposed to touring the world, and that kind of just kind of straightened us out a little bit as far as what the subject matter of the songs were, stuff like that. Like, seeing the world actually made it more about the world than, you know, somebody named Amanda Bunkface from our town, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, plus All Killer was like, we were fresh out of high school.
Yeah.
You know, those songs were written when we were like 19. All we knew was like high school life.
Yeah.
So then you go to This Look Infected, a lot happened in like the 2-year span or 3-year span.
Yeah.
Like the songwriting and
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff, like Dave said, like it's just about seeing the world, what was going on at the time. There was, you know, it was a lot of war happening, like all that kind of stuff was going on. So, you know, we were kind of writing about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was funny because like I'm familiar with a lot of the songs, but like I did go back and like read like what some of the subject matter of the songs were about. And having the subject matter in front of me and reflecting with the time, it's like you said, so much was happening at the time.
Was, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, this record was being recorded at the time that George Bush was talking about going into Iraq, right? So it's like that. It's that old, and that kind of stuff was going on in the news while we were writing this. So
it's so crazy. Yeah, and there's so much reflects. Also just like the way that like. I mean, I think it gets understated quite a bit how things changed after 9/11, just in terms of how people went about their day-to-day lives.
And yeah.
It's crazy to think you guys were in the midst of that traveling world, like on planes and shit.
Yeah, we were on tour when 9/11 happened in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
We were opening for Blink-182 and when that was happening. And then, so after that happened, all the attention shifted to that, obviously. Yeah. So, you know, some of these songs are probably reflective of that.
Yeah.
Do you remember like what it was like, the conversations you guys had before you went into the studio to make the album, or was it the type of thing that after touring for All Killer you just jumped right in?
We didn't really stop working.
Yeah.
We just kept going. Yeah.
There was a couple conversations about making a heavier album. I remember that. Like there was a conscious effort to get a little heavier.
Yeah.
A little harder. but other than that, it was a pretty quick turnaround because we were touring so much on All Killer. And the label really wanted a new album because it was like, keep the momentum. So it was, I remember Derek was writing stuff in the back of the bus. Mm-hmm. And then we had like a 2-month window of like getting home, doing pre-production, rehearsing, and then going to record in New York.
Yeah.
And then we had like dates booked on the other end of like starting the tour again. So we had to have the record done in this short amount of time.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really an overthought album. It was just kind of, it was what it was. We just like did it.
And when I look back, the album does feel like it was very much made with touring in mind, because you knew obviously you were going to tour more. When it came to playing the album eventually, was it pretty easy? Like, was it almost seamless?
With any one of our records, there's always a learning curve for us.
Yeah.
Because we're always trying to progress and become better musicians. But I just think actual tracking of that record, we were so hot off of the heels of touring for, it would have been like 3 years at that point. Mm-hmm. That we were just kind of like clicking and going, and if a part needed to be written, it was at a time where you had to pay the studio hour by hour. You couldn't just sit at home and take the time and write and really focus on everything. So yeah, everything was kind of motoring along pretty quickly on that record.
Man, that is insane. You know, I vividly remember being a kid and watching the videos you made for the album.
Yeah.
And it was the type of thing where I remember Yahoo, it was like pre-YouTube, Yahoo had a video player. And you could like maybe make a playlist of just, I think, 10 or 12 videos, and you would watch the same videos every day.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I had like 2 or 3 Sum 41 videos on that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The video for the Hell song sticks out specifically because at the time, the idea that you could make, I mean, this was even before our show, like Robot Chicken. So the idea that you can make art with like action figures and have a narrative and a story was just like almost kind of alien and really funny.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder for you guys, when you look back at some of these videos, like, what are the type of things that stick out to you, particularly in memories? Like, do memories stick out for you?
Yeah, I mean, especially with Hell song, I just kind of remember the PXL 2000. Remember that video camera?
Yeah.
You can get a Toys R Us. It just, that video reminds me of videos my cousins and I would make with that old camera that we'd get from, you know, like, I think it was like $100 back then, and still super expensive, about $100.
Yeah.
But, it was fun. And
yeah, it was also at a time when, like, big budget music videos were still around.
Yeah.
Like, you know, In Too Deep was hundreds of thousands of dollars to make just the one video.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty proud that we were able to, like, put that aside and make a video for, like, so cheap.
Yeah.
When we could have actually, like, probably, the label probably would have given us a lot of money again to make a music video. But we did it for so cheap, just went and bought some action figures. But, you know, we had to clear those action figures, too.
Did
we? We had to go to every single person.
Oh,
like a
shit.
Clearance, yeah, because I guess it's their likeliness.
Oh, fuck.
And we actually had some people that declined. I mean,
yeah.
I think there was like Eminem didn't want to do it.
Eminem declined,
Who else? It was Michael Jackson?
Michael Jackson declined?
That. Yeah, he declined, yeah.
We had a Jordan too, didn't we?
Oh,
Jordan,
that is
Jordan.
So funny.
Michael Jordan.
Did you guys find out the clearance after the fact, though? This feels like one of those things after the fact.
It was kind of like our record company was kind of working on it. The legal side of it was dealing with everyone. Most people didn't care. Like, obviously, it's like promotion for their action figure.
Yeah, that's so dope.
We had to get clearance.
I promise I'm not going to ask about other videos or tracks, but what kills me about this video, because I was rewatching it last night, and I have a background in production, and what blew me away rewatching this video, like years after the fact, is I could tell that like every shot had a storyboard attached to it. That's definitely something I didn't notice as a kid, and as time has gone on, but like rewatching that video, it felt very deliberate. Is it your hands that are moving the action?
A lot of times.
Yeah, a lot of times.
I mean, there's other extras and stuff too. It actually was a lot of people in one little apartment. And it was a lot of planning for each scene.
It looked
like
it.
You know, and pulling the rugs out so things move, and just like how it's all coordinated to the music, and so it, you know, it looks simple, but it was actually a little tricky.
That is so fucking crazy. And I wonder, is there a song off the album that you wish or you feel had the potential to be a single?
I mean, I guess there was the three.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The one that was being pushed for by Rob Stevenson, I remember he'd always come out with ones where he'd be like, oh, I didn't even think of that. But Rob Stevenson was one of our A&Rs at the time, and he was talking about it all messed up.
Yeah,
he really wanted that one to go as a single.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's like the fan favorite album tracks like My Direction, No Brains, people seem to like a lot, so maybe those two, but I don't know. I think the three singles, I feel like Over My Head's like one of my favorite albums or songs on the album, and but it I don't even know if it did get played or not. It was a single, but I don't know what it did on the radio or whatever.
When it came for rehearsing for this tour particularly, was there a song that you guys had to relearn that was a bit tricky? I mean, individually or like collectively?
What was it for you?
I think it was just, I mean, Hooch we hadn't played for a long time. It was like, it's the last song on the album. I don't think we played that in years and years and years. So it was just, I mean, none of the songs on this album are super tricky. It's just like, once you start playing them again, it's kind of muscle memory.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, that's how that goes. But Hooch was one that was like really foreign to me, but it's super easy. It's just like, I just have to sit down and really think about it.
Yeah. What about you, Doug?
I think probably Hyperpara, whatever the rest of it is.
That one.
Yeah, just a bunch of pedal work, and like there's been a couple shows where like I've missed it and had a brain fart and like just stopped. Like just stopped playing and then caught back in on the one. Yeah.
You know what's crazy to me though, like with listening to this album, like listening back to it, and I feel with like this aspect of rehearsals, I feel like for you guys, even though Sum 41's music is always really loud and aggressive as the years have gone on, I feel with this particular album, because of how fast it is, when you guys were rehearsing, like was it ever like hard or weird to keep up with each other or to hear what the other person was doing?
I think it was just different for Steve at the time because it went from like all killer, which was like, you know, somewhat of a fast album, but then like we introduced like so much double kick on Does Look Infected.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, you'll see it tonight, and even our drummer Al Franks, like, you know, it took him a while just to be able to get that double kick constantly throughout the whole set. There's a lot of it. And so I think that was the trickiest, maybe for Steve.
I mean, we were sitting there, we were just like, yeah, you're gonna play some double kick at 186. So go. Yeah,
that was just so funny. That probably must have been one of those moments where he remembered that when you guys were so young when you made this, because he's probably thinking like, why would you make songs like this?
Yeah. But he, I mean, for his age, he was always, even through high school, Steve was like such a phenomenal fast drummer. So
yeah,
he kind of got it like right away. It took some practice, but he picked it up.
That's really dope. You know, it's trippy being older and watching the video for Still Waiting, because at the time it came out, like I mentioned, I was in the suburbs with my family, and I think what's incredible about looking back at that time period is that like bands like The Strokes and indie rock was becoming dominant, but for a lot of us people in the suburbs that really wasn't the case. It felt like such a city thing, and it's interesting, like I moved here in New York City back in 2008 when I was 18, and I remember I had all these bands I love, like Brand New, you guys, and like a lot of pop rock. But coming to a city like this, it's almost like that's almost relatively non-existent.
Yeah.
looking back at that video, though, because that's the thing I want to particularly ask about, like, it's obvious that it winks and pokes fun at, like, the whole indie rock thing. But tell me, was the satire of the video obvious to people when it came out, or was it almost, like, a little weird for you guys?
No, I mean, we asked the Strokes.
Yeah, and I think it was more about making fun of ourselves. It was, like, almost like the joke was kind of, like, that pop punk thing is dead now. And this is the cool new thing.
Yeah.
And so that's like the record company telling us, you guys are over. You guys got to be like this now.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the joke. And yeah, I mean, like they said, we actually ran into the Strokes before we did the video.
No way.
In a hotel in London, England. And they were staying in the same place and we were having beers with them. And we said, we had this like strange idea for a video where we kind of like turn into you guys. Yeah. And we're gonna dress the same and like the video's gonna look like yours. And they're kind of confused, and then I remember Julian just being like, fuck, that's amazing. You guys gotta do it. And so we did it. And
that's the funny thing, because I think with them particularly, just like the whole indie rock thing, so much of it is dominated by how people write about it. I think it's so rare that you get like the actual musicians' perspectives. I've done work with Julian and Albert before in the past.
Oh, nice.
And what's really funny about them is that if you even say the word indie rock to them or indie, they just kind of go like, I don't even know what that is. But people associate them with that, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, but the Strokes were a lot more like, kind of like rock and roll, like garage rock.
Garage rock, yeah. Lo-fi garage rock.
Yeah.
Going a little deeper into that aspect, I mean, part of the joke, because jokes obviously come from, like, observations. Did it really feel that way at the time, that, like, pop rock was dead and indie rock dominated? I mean, looking back in retrospect, obviously, but I wonder for you guys, like, did it feel that way?
It felt like it was dying, for sure. A lot of stuff felt like it was dying, because Napster started hitting the head, like, even, you know, parents were into Napster at that point, so that was, like, that's another crazy thing about this record, is that it was, like, the end of that like big money spending album rock and roll era. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of rode the tsunami into shore.
Yeah. It's funny because you mentioned that briefly with the video for Fat Lip. Like I rewatched that recently too, and like, I mean, obviously it's expensive, but watching it with like a 2018 lens, and especially understanding production a little bit, I watch, I'm like, holy fuck, they gave these people this much money?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, those Fat Lip and Into Deep were expensive videos.
Yeah.
But Still Waiting and Hellsong, cheap, really cheap videos.
Yeah.
Well, we could have actually, like I said, we could have probably spent the money.
But it is wild. I know what you mean. Just even looking back at 2000 stuff, it's like, it kind of looks like the film quality all looks older. Like when I was a kid, and my parents would be like, oh, come watch the Apple Dumpling Gang. It kind of reminds me of that.
I think I saw a meme like on Twitter. Someone said something like, why is it that videos from 2005 look like they were made like 40 years ago?
Yeah, dude, I don't know. But we were rocking a lot of 70s shit around then. Like,
yeah.
Big fat collars, like unbuttoned. Yeah, like swingers and stuff like that. Those were like the movies where you're like, oh yeah, cool.
Actually, this reminds me of the video for Over My Head, because I watched that too, and it's mostly, for people who haven't seen it, it's mostly comprised of tour footage.
Yeah.
But even that, like, it looks old as shit.
It does, I know. I don't know why, maybe, I don't know. But I don't even know what film we're using back. You probably know more than we did.
We were using actual film.
It looked like VHS. No
digital doctoring. Yeah, it's like,
yeah.
It looks cool though.
It does look cool.
Yeah, just wait. Chris Nolan films might look like that.
Right?
That's yeah.
Crazy. It's crazy to think, though, that around that time, because of just like how young you were and the fact you were touring so much, I mean, obviously touring is quite debaucherous. Did it seem crazy to you at the time that you would film everything or film so much?
No, we were so used to it.
Yeah.
We were doing it even in high school. We were filming like house parties and stuff like that. That was just part of the band.
Yeah.
It was like you had the band and maybe a tour manager, sound guy, and also a videographer all the time.
Yeah.
Or we'd before we could afford a videographer, we would just film ourselves.
Yeah.
We bought a video camera.
Yeah, that's right. Steve had one. Yeah.
Yeah. Jumping like into now, I wonder what was it like for you guys to have the initial conversations towards doing this tour? Because I feel like what's interesting is that like out of all the albums you can do an anniversary tour for, this one to me as a fan makes the most sense.
Yeah.
But I don't even think I would know how to explain why. I wonder like how that conversation came about for you guys.
I think it's because it's a consensus over a lot of our fans that this is still their favorite album.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the album, like everyone's like, oh no, I like All Killer, I like Trapper, I like the new one. But I think overall, like fans are like, this is still like in their top at least two albums of ours.
Yeah.
And it's always like, it's always been like that for a long time.
I think I would say that too. I think for me, it's Chuck on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the things that people say to me the most is that it was the most left field second record out of all the pop punk bands that were out at the time, right?
It really was when I looked back on it.
And they kind of put us in, like that person that told me that, they were like, well, this record kind of put you in a different genre for us.
Yeah, going from like an In Too Deep to a Still Waiting is like really different, you know, for a lot of people.
I think what's really interesting too is that like, I think a lot of people tend to think of it as like, if a band gets louder, they almost have to sacrifice the element of melody and songwriting. Mm. But it almost felt like with this album and Chuck, and I would even say with Underclass Hero, like those three as it like went on, it's almost like you guys fought against that notion where it's like, we could still have melody and be heavy, as heavy as we want to be.
Yeah, that's basically it. Add a couple shredding guitar solos in there, and there you go.
We all come from a long line of dissension, for sure. I remember people being like, it's not going to sound the same. It's like, yeah, of course it's not. It's going to be different every time. So.
Yeah. And Dave, I know you rejoined the band a couple years ago, and it's been like years now, but I wonder for you, revisiting this particular album, I mean, does it bring back specific memories in a way?
For sure. This record in particular, I remember being super satisfied with, because I remember I was one of the ones that, like, as soon as we started talking about like, let's get a little heavier, I was like, hell yeah, let's do that for sure, right? And it gave me an opportunity to learn how to solo properly, and I think we were just like firing on all cylinders at that point. So it just this whole record and this whole vibe of everything made me feel really good to be back in it.
That's really dope, man. I have a couple more questions, but thanks, you know, again for taking the time. It's really trippy seeing you guys.
No problem, man.
Yeah, of course. I wonder, like, because you earlier before I hit the recorder, you mentioned how you guys have been on some dates for this tour already, and Europe already happened with this album. I wonder what would you say has been the most surprising aspect of touring for this specific album?
Like the anniversary album?
Yeah, the anniversary album.
I think it's just like I said before, like just how many people are into coming to this show.
Yeah.
Like this is 2,800 people sold out tonight. That's crazy to me. That 2,800 people want to just come see this album perform live.
Yeah.
So I think that's when it started going on sale. I was looking at the places like, holy, some of these places are fucking huge.
Yeah.
Like,
it was a bit daunting for
us in the
state,
for us in the US nowadays, like. Some of them are really big, so I was like, oh man, I don't know how this, and then they started, like, the bigger ones started selling, so that was the most shocking thing to me.
And I want to point out for some people who are listening, we're sat in Terminal 5 now, and what's very significant about this venue, in contrast to most of the venues here in the city, I would say this venue has a very interesting element, where it's not predominantly local New Yorkers who come to visit, but people from New Jersey and Connecticut who come in. So
you can just swim across the river and
yeah.
The
But knowing that the show is sold out, I just bring that up because knowing how this venue is, it definitely means people from just like other towns and cities are coming in.
Yeah, that's good too, for sure.
Well, New York, New Jersey too. Like, New York was a early home for us because that's where our label was based out of, and we were one of those lucky bands. We were able to have a few labels going after us. And in the end, it was between Interscope and Island Def Jam. And Island Def Jam just like brought us in. We felt at home, felt like family. And we all kind of loved New York as well at the time.
Yeah.
So this place was one of the first cities that ever accepted us as a band. And we were always told it was the toughest climate to ever play in and the toughest place to ever be a part of. And we were invited in by you know, all the surrounding suburbs, people in the city, and it just, this place has always made us feel amazing.
We actually did the CD release here for Chuck, or does it look infected at Tower Records?
I think it was it Chuck?
Maybe it was Chuck.
Oh wow, the good old Tower, because they used to be
It's like
Times Square,
a corner or something.
Yeah,
we did like a, might have been Chuck.
Maybe it was Does This Look Infected? Yeah, I can't remember.
I remember, we, that was a fun one.
Yeah.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time here.
Yeah.
kind of good.
And I'm curious because you brought up the fact that you guys are also in the midst of writing new music. I know you probably can't talk too much about that, but how's it feeling so far?
Good. I mean, it's super early stages, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, this whole year was supposed to be spent just doing that, and then this came up, so we're taking a month off to do this, and then we'll just start getting back into it again. Yeah. But it's so early to even say much about it.
Yeah, but before I let you go, though, I just still want to touch on that a little bit more, just that aspect that it must, I mean, after so many years of doing this and touring, it must be trippy for both of you to know that there is another album on the horizon. Like, does it make you feel a particular way knowing that you can still do that? That you could still get together, write, and then tour?
It's like, it's kind of like relief. Like, something like this, like having a career in music is really touch and go. So, I mean, to be able to keep on going and to have another record on, you know, in the oven, it's like, this is pretty rad. Like,
yeah.
What else can you say?
Yeah, we didn't really look ahead. When we were in our early 20s making those first couple of albums, we didn't look ahead this far.
Yeah.
So to be able to still play these kind of places at this point is just kind of like gravy. It's amazing.
That's really ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still putting money in the walls of my house.
Super paranoid that it's gonna be.
Oh god! Do you know what's funny? We should probably. I'm thinking if like people might be too young to get that reference. Oh, that was good. That's good. Super paranoid. Thanks for chatting.
Oh no problem, man. Good to see you.